Oh, hell, they're going to safety, man.
Oh, y'all get your stuff on. Get everything on, man.
They're going to safety, man. I'll be in the back.
Here comes the clipboard, man.
I wonder if he brought something to eat.
Hello, and welcome to Safety Man Coming, the podcast about the people behind the cones on the roadway. For our first episode, our guest is Max Watson. Max has been in and around the highway construction business for almost 50 years. He's the reason I'm in the safety business now. As you'll hear, Max has seen a lot in his time, and he has a passion for the work and the people. Let's dive in and hear it straight from him. All right, so Max Watson, how are you?
How am I? I'm good.
Yep. And remember, this is not a deposition, right? You can relax a little bit. So, I guess first things first, man, just tell me kind of where you come from, who you are, and just a little bit of background on who Max Watson is.
I'm Max Watson. I'm from Caledonia, Mississippi. I know ain't nobody ever heard of that, but it's just south of Tupelo and north of Columbus.
So my grandpa used to say it's south of Tupelo, which is right below One Below.
That's right. And I raised up on a farm, small farm. I worked for farmers around, worked in grocery stores, and then I graduated from high school. And I did not want to go to college, so my daddy worked for a little company called Warren Brothers. He said, well, I'll get you on down there, but you're going to have to make it on your own. So I did, and the first day I was there, I dipped water all day long in a subdivision that had been undercut so that the curb and gutter was already in it. And I knew I had a future that night because I was at the very bottom.
Yeah. Ain't nowhere else to go.
That's right.
So you didn't want to go to college. Did you have anything else that you had wanted to do or anything like that? Or was it kind of, all right, well, this is where I'm at.
I wanted farm.
Yeah.
But in 73, everything was getting so crazy out of sight. So it was the best thing for me to just try to find a job and do it. And it had been a good company. My daddy worked there for 18, 20 years and it was a good company. It raised me. So I said, I'll just try it too.
Well, now, and like we were talking about earlier, I noticed when I drove in here that you did grow up on the other side of the tracks. They didn't hold that against you, did they?
No. My daddy was from the same side of the tracks I was. So everything was fine there.
So once you got into the construction side, like you said, you started at the very bottom, right? I mean, you're dipping water at the time where dipping water was still a thing. So what made you stick with it?
Working outside.
Yeah.
Enjoyed it. The people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was some really good people there. My daddy had hired a lot of them, and they sort of took me under their wing and took care of me. Now, my boss had some ill feelings at my daddy, I think, and I got a little flack there sometimes,
right.
But it all worked out good.
Yeah.
And like I say, I did that worked on the road for 8 or 10 years, and then we did traffic control, got to be a big thing. And I had to get certified in that. And everybody just said, hey, I had a cone boy and all that. But I had a man with the highway department tell me, you're going to be better off than they are right there if you'll just stick to what you're doing. And sure enough, it did end up working out good. I did traffic control for about, I don't know, for the end of those 8 years for about 13 years. And then we had some bad wrecks up here.
Mm-hmm.
And nobody wanted to take pictures of them. If anything ever happened, I had to go take pictures of wrecks. So then an opening come up in safety, and that's how I got into it.
So you kind of backed into the safety side of it then and didn't go through the formal education, stuff like that. You really just, I guess in kind of those days, it was the thing nobody else wanted to do, and they put you to doing different parts of it, and all of a sudden it starts to make sense and it kind of sticks.
And that's what the man that hired me to do this, he said, with your years of experience out there and knowing the ins and outs of it, you're going to be know more than I have and been to 4 years of college. So that's what we did, and it did prove out to be good because I have done everything that anybody should have been fired for. I did it. So I knew what to look at when I started in safety.
Yeah.
And I was not greeted real well at the Columbus area because they all knew me, and I knew them. And we tried to get people to go to wearing hard hats. And most of it was compliance, but you had a few of the older old-timers that just, you know, they were not going to do it. So you know, with those people, you just have to try to talk to them and try to reason with them, show them what you're trying to do, that you're trying to do your job. Because one thing I learned on a farm, you treat with people with respect. And you treat people with respect who you're working with every day. And when you do that, you can get more than if you're trying to screw over them all the time.
Yeah, to me, that's being in the safety side of it now. That's been the fascinating part of it, right, is the people side of it. And everybody is different. There's a different way to get through to everybody. And figuring out each person, you know, and what is it going to take? What do I need to do to get through to this person of where we've got some common ground?
And that is a talent to do that, because skipping ahead, we was on this thing called a safety action team one time, going around doing these great surveys. And let me shut up about that. But we had a guy that was there that was a safety man. And the Hispanic said, the safety man won't talk to us. And so we was talking to him. Why don't you try to talk to him? He said, I don't know Spanish. So I told him, we were in a meeting there. I told him, I said, I want you to watch this. And I walked to one of the Hispanics, stuck my hand out, gave him a smile and shook it. He did the same thing in return. That's your first step. They will help you learn to teach them what they need to do. And they even teach you a little Spanish on the side. But you've got to communicate with them. You can't just ignore people.
Yep.
They're part of the team, and no one person can do this job.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And that's, to me, that, like I said, that's been the part that's been fascinating is learning more and more how to find that common ground with people and how to relate whatever their life experience is to what we're doing now so they can better understand why we're trying to do it like we're doing it. And so that's always been fascinating to me to see when you're doing this, how do you go through getting people who don't directly work for you, right? They don't report to you. How do you get them doing what you need them to do?
That's right. None of them directly work for you. And again, it's just communication. Coming out of the job, bringing them some drinks, bringing them cold water, seeing what they need, trying to help them. Don't just go out there with a camera and a clipboard in your hand and go to writing people up. Because if you want to turn something off, you have just cut it off like the faucet when you do that. You've got to learn how to get along with people. See what they do. Because if you've never done this job, which I was fortunate, I did it out there for 13 years. But if you just come out of college and go out here, you don't know jack squat what these people are doing. You've got to learn it. We had a program here one time in Mississippi where when they hired somebody that was going to be in management or if they're going to be in work at the lab or whatever they're going to do, for 6 weeks you worked on the road crew, 6 weeks you worked at the shop, 6 weeks you did something else, worked at the plant, so that you've got a little idea of what's going on. Because it's easy to look back and say, well, that's crazy. I don't know why they do that. Get out there and see why they're doing it.
Yeah. Now, I totally agree with that. And that is one that I still believe in, right? I mean, you can go to school and have as much schooling as you want, but I experienced it too, coming from the survey side, right? I came out, had a degree in surveying, and man, I knew some stuff about surveying. And when I first hit the ground, I figured out real quick, like, I didn't know a whole lot about how day to day to do what I needed to do, right? All these situations would come up that weren't in the book. And what do I do about that? And so, I don't know, that kind of helped me realize, I guess, when I got to the safety side, that you got to be a little pragmatic to an extent, right?
By the way, how'd you get into safety?
Well, it's a funny story that you know well. And this is not meant to be about me, but I appreciate you asking. So I was surveying for it, and I was out there at the dog track in West Memphis, and I had missed the safety meeting that morning because I think I was probably at that point in my life, I was probably hungover and did not make it in time for the 6 a.m. safety meeting. But yeah, I was out there driving stakes, hot, sweating, and I saw you and Fred Swan come out, and y'all were, you know, No offense meant at this time, but both of y'all kind of standing there pot-bellied, hand on your hips, looking at us out there working, and you asked me if I wanted to be in safety, and I looked down the road at all the stakes I had left to drive, and I looked at y'all talking about going to get ice cream, and I said, man, I can probably do that. Is that how you remember it?
Yeah, I remember. You said, well, I'd like a little time to think about it.
Yeah.
And I called him the next day at lunch. I said, meet me at McDonald's. I'll get you a hamburger. I said, have you made your mind up? Because we had to make this do fast because his boss was out of town and I was stealing him from him. So There you go.
So if for some reason you ever hear this, Jim Smith, really, really sorry, you get the confession right there from Max as far as what happened. Lord, okay. Well,
let's go back to when we were working.
Yeah, 11 minutes in, and we've already started confessing things that we probably shouldn't.
Well, there's one thing about it. There's a lot of things that can't be confessed ever.
Yeah.
Now, let me tell you about some of the stuff about working with people.
Okay.
I was doing the traffic control, and I was always one of the last ones in. One day, I was coming in, and I saw the service truck pulled over on the side of the road up above the shop by some bushes. Then I saw the road operator get out and put 2 5-gallon cans out there. And I sort of figured it could have been gas, but I didn't know. So I waved at them when they come on by and passed me. I let them turn in, and I looked out there, and sure enough, it was gas. So I got both the cans of gas and carried it home. No, I'm joking. I moved on a little side road where I could see them and had them sitting in the back of my truck. He came up there, and he was looking, couldn't find out where he'd put them. And I hollered at him, hey, you looking for something? And he got a little ashy when I did that. And I said, look, you take this stuff, and I ain't saying nothing about it, but if you ever do it again, I'm going to have to turn you in. Now, what did that do for the relationship with me and that man?
Yeah, it did a lot.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. Then when you go back to ask people to do something, and I wasn't in safety then, I was just doing traffic control. But there's things that you have to do. Sometimes look the other way. Now, if it had been $10,000, that'd have been a different store. And gas probably wasn't 75 cents a gallon then.
Right.
But, you know, if you can steal it, it's better.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Free is always better.
Yeah.
Well, it does make a huge difference. And I heard somebody say one time before, you can't fire your way to safety, right? You can't fire your way to success. And so, if that's the case, we've all got to learn from our mistakes. And you don't learn from your mistake if the first time you make one, you get fired for it. So there's got to be there's a middle ground somewhere in there for most things, right? Some things are, you know, the one strike and you're out. But for a lot of stuff, like you got to be able to learn from it. And those people sometimes will be really good mouthpieces for you later on for everything else. They'll be the one to tell other people, hey, look, you can't do that, you know?
Let me bounce around and go back. You were talking about all the schooling you can have doesn't make you know everything. We had a guy get hurt real bad where the roller was rolling towards a paver, and he went to back up, and they told me that the transmission messed up on it, and he ran up on the paver. And when he did, it degloved that guy's hand. I mean, his leg. And he was in the hospital in bad shape for a long time. So they told me to go down there and see what happened. So I called them. They told me where the rollers were parked, and I went down there, and they had two of them. I want to say they were Cat 340Cs, but I'm not sure. I can't remember the model number. But they were parked head-to-head. And they said, you can see the marks on the back of that roller where it hit it, or the front of it. I said, okay. So I was looking at the front of it. Wasn't no marks there. I walked around, looked the back of it, and you could see where it happened. And this safety person at the head down there then, he ruled by the iron fist. And they were fixing to sue Caterpillar for everything they were worth because that equipment malfunctioned. So when I got down there and saw what had happened, they had the mat turned, rotated on the mat. So if you're going forward to the paver, you had to have it pulled backwards. And what happened was he had it just like that.
Mm-hmm.
And when he got up there and saw he was getting too close, he pulled back further, and that shot him forward further.
Right.
And that's how it happened. But they were fixing to, you know, make millions and millions of dollars on Caterpillar. That's what they're going to do.
Right.
But it took a dumb butt that had never done nothing to come down there and figure that out.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's always a scare with those rollers, right? Because the seats turn back and forth. You can move side to side. It's real easy to get confused about which direction you're supposed to be going.
But the backup alarm only works in reverse.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I keep trying to tell people on those spreaders. If you hear that backup alarm coming to you, they got that thing rotated. They need to turn it.
Exactly right. That's a very good point. So once you got in and got to doing all this and started experiencing the safety side of it, right, and you're learning how to deal with people, you're also learning how to manage incidents and things like that and what to do when something happens, you're learning yourself how to train other people and things like that. So once you get going with all that, what made you stay with it? Because it's not always it's not always, you know, unicorns and rainbows,
now,
right?
This is not the most glamorous job you could ever have.
Right.
People will call you the most no-count on the job.
Right.
And they'll tell you that to your face because they know there's no repercussion for them.
So, and I'll tell you, you know, from my time since you and I, well, while we worked together, but also in my time since then, lots and lots of people know you or know of you, and you're either famous or infamous, depending on how they got to know you.
How their interactions were.
Right.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that is definitely how it works out. You can't be best friends with everybody, right?
You never will be.
Yeah, you can't be.
Even sometimes you and I had some little disagreements. I know that Fred and I had a few disagreements over the air conditioning in the office, but that's neither here nor there. We're talking about construction work now.
That's right, yeah.
We started doing drug testing after I'd been in this for about 3 years. So everybody had to get trained to collect urine and to get a breathalyzer and learn how to work that. So when we got that, they started wanting us to do some unannounced testing.
Mm-hmm.
We did all the randoms, but wanted to do some unannounced testing also. So I went out one day to do some testing, and you find out a lot about people. We went out to do some alcohol testing, and there was one man that didn't, he was already on a job, and they said they was going to get him, but he never did come up. So as I was packing my stuff up, getting ready to leave, he finally come up. I said, come on in, man. I've been looking for you. Mr. Max, I got to tell you. I said, what? He said, I had some marijuana this weekend, and I just can't take this test. I said, well, this is your lucky day, because all we're doing is testing for alcohol today. And so I tested. I said, but now I got to tell you, we do have a drug program. And if you had marijuana, it takes 30 days to get out of your system. After about 33 days, I'm going to come get you, and we're going to test.
Yeah.
Guess what? He wouldn't test.
Yeah.
He wouldn't test. So I tell you, it is hard when we had several people test positive for cocaine.
Mm-hmm.
Go through the employee assistance program, do good for about 8 weeks, 10 weeks, slip up again.
Yeah, that's anecdotally, that's kind of been my experience too. We don't have the program's there, and we certainly try to use it when that has come up in the past, and typically we don't get a lot of good results out of it. We always have something similar to what you're talking about happen. So if you hadn't gotten into construction, what would you probably have been doing with the looking back on the skills that you turned out you probably had?
Farming would have been the only thing I really wanted to do.
Yeah.
Because you started your own boss. You worked your own pace, but you got to work.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why it didn't bother me working in construction, because we work from can to cane all the time.
Yep.
And you tell you're going to be off one day, and guess what? You ended up working. You just had to suck it up, buttercup, and go.
Yeah. I always hated those about 3 o'clock on Friday afternoon is where you get the call. It's like, yeah, we're going to work on Saturday. It's like, man, I already got plans, you know?
And then our Sunday.
Yeah. That too. Luckily, by the time I came along, most of the Sundays were over with. But we, with the night work on the interstate, you know, you start on Sunday night, so you could have Sunday night all the way through Saturday afternoon if you timed it just right.
Night work was one of the worst things that you had to do. It was good because it was less traffic sometimes, but I don't care how many lights you got out there, it you can't see as good.
Mm-mm.
And if you're laying mix, it really didn't look as good, because you'll think it's the worst thing in the world. Come back out the next day, looks pretty good.
Yeah, when you look down through there, you see those lights from a distance kind of skimming the top of the road. It looks like it might as well be a gravel road down through there.
Like a rub bore.
Yeah, and you come out the next day, it's like, man, we may get an award on this one. It's smooth. The
ride's good.
Yep. So, yeah, so night work is one of the things that probably sets highway construction apart from a lot of the other construction it is an integral part of heavy highway construction is doing night work.
And the thing of it is, if that's all you were dedicated to was just night work, that's fine. But we were doing day work also. And I would work, you know, I'd get home at 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning, sleep till 10, 11 o'clock, and then go out, work till the night crew come out, be there at the safety meeting, be with them. It was a lot of sleepless nights.
Mm-hmm.
But again, I did it because I enjoyed it.
Yeah.
That interstate work, the good thing was when they could close off one side and you could work on it.
Mm-hmm.
But then you always had that trials and tribulations of trucks getting into your job site, wrecks happening on the job, on the other lanes. It was something all the time.
Yep.
And talking about wrecks, you can see some terrible things out there, and you just might as well get ready for it. if you're a new person starting out, the worst wreck I was on scene was on Highway 25 in Starville. A group of surveyors were headed back to Jackson, and a drunk come around the curve on Highway 25 and run into him on head on, killed five people.
Yeah.
Threw the baby out of the car, up against a tree, knocked his clothes off it.
Yeah.
Golly.
I mean, it's stuff you don't forget.
Yeah, no joke.
And that was February 25th, 1979. Reason I remember that because of my first year anniversary of my first marriage.
Yeah. Yeah, that, those, some of those things do stick with you, man. That's for sure. I mean, yep. there's some dates that you remember, and yeah, those, I don't know. You're the one that told me, you know, sometimes you got to laugh to keep from crying, and safety is one of those for sure. I mean, you have those funny moments and all those kind of funny things that happen. That's kind of how this whole idea that I had started, was a lot of those funny things we've seen. But, you know, you have to have that to offset some of the things that, you know, keep you up at night, or some of the things you don't ever forget and things like that.
Just like laugh to keep from crying. We had a foreman one time that had a EEOC claim brought against him because he was having a little relations with a girl out on the job, and then she wanted him to stop. He kept coming by her house and doing all this stuff. So they filed a claim on it. So went to the claim, got everything settled on it, and he asked this gentleman, he said, well, you know, why'd you do that? He said, I'm just a man. And that we laughed at that, but later on that proved to be so true.
Yeah.
Because I have gotten some situations myself where I was just a man.
Now, again, this is not a deposition, and you're not required to confess anything you don't want to.
No, but, I haven't told you nothing I didn't want to.
And I appreciate that. That's probably important.
That's good for all of us.
Yeah, I'm going to have to figure out some legal disclaimers to go at the end of this thing, I can tell. So this is why I got you on the first one, because I knew it was going to help me figure out the pitfalls I was going to need to make sure I could clean up. So I appreciate that.
Yeah, you're going to have some cleaning. Whew,
ain't no joke. So, all right. Well, I figured when I asked you what else you would be doing besides, you know, safety, I figured you would tell me something about being a highway patrolman. Weren't you going to do that at one
time? That was after I was working with I'd been here for several years, and I just got sick of it. Some of the things that was going on, I was tired of it. And I did get accepted into highway patrol school. They had 600 applicants and took 56 people, and I was one of them. I was there 12, 13 weeks. I can't remember now. But got my knees hurt. They was giving me cortisone in them. They said, if you keep on, you're going to get permanent damage. So got out of that. But that's one of the best things I ever did, because I met a lot of people all over the state of Mississippi that was in highway patrol. And it sure is nice to know somebody when you're out on a job and need some help.
Yep.
You can call them and get them to send you some people out there. Worked out good.
Yeah. Knowing somebody with some blue lights.
Yeah. But I would have got killed, I'm sure. For different reasons, if I'd been a highway patrolman.
Yep.
I probably not had that best personality at that time.
Yep.
And then some of the people I'd been talking to might have got me in trouble, too.
Probably so.
But that's neither here nor there.
Right.
Didn't happen.
Well, so one of the things that seems to be, especially for highway construction, that is, I don't know, as far as a safety person goes, it's kind of your stock in trade. Like when we see other safety people, the things that we trade back and forth, there's two things primarily. One is good places that we found to eat, right? And the other is good places that we found to go to the restroom. Because those, when you're on the road in some random places that highway construction takes place, it can be really hard to find those two things.
Yeah.
So do you remember any in particular, or have you got any now that are good road food places?
Oh, yeah. I know all the good chicken places. There's one up there right outside of Nettleton on the right, if you're headed north. That's some fine chicken that, you know, go in, get it out, get back in your truck.
Right.
And as far as place going to the bathroom, if I just had to do the quick one, I'd just pull off on the side of the road and do it right there.
Mississippi born and raised.
Yeah. You ain't got nothing else to do. But chicken barbecue, Fred Swan told us the best barbecue place in Memphis.
Yeah. That's exactly right.
So we right. Leonard's.
Leonard's, that's what it was. Leonard's. I think Leonard's closed.
Yeah, I heard that.
That's one thing that I've noticed, too. I started making a list a couple of years ago, and looking back at it recently, a bunch of those places are closed now. And I don't know if that is something that I'm doing to them subconsciously. I don't know if I have that power to where when I come there and eat, that's like the kiss of death. I don't know if that's the case.
I think COVID was the biggest thing.
Okay, well, we'll go with that then.
Yeah.
Because And there's a couple in an area of Alabama that I cover now that I like. And just in the 2.5 years that I've been going down there, some of those places are closed already. So, yeah, it's been rough.
Maybe you need to buy a little bit more.
Well, I don't know if I need to buy a little bit more or maybe just don't go to someplace. You know, I don't know. That's the one I feel like you could write a travel log about, is good road food places when you're working and then good places to use a restroom.
Yep. You know, if I was going to Greenville, it was Exxon Station there on top of the hill at Winona.
Mm-hmm.
Get you something good to eat there, go to the bathroom there, get on the road. I went to Greenville one day, had some random drug tests to do, and I did one of them on a gentleman, and we were getting flu shots there that morning. No, he was clowning when he got his shot. Name was... I don't guess I need to say his name, does it?
I would not. Yeah, I don't think it's necessary.
Well, anyway, it was a very prominent name.
Mm-hmm.
You would know it.
Oh, okay.
And he did his drug test. 3 days later, I get a call, says positive cocaine. So I go back over there, and I said,
person,
y'all have got to get him off the job. Well, when there's something like that, nobody wants to do that. Well, we're fixing to go to Letton. Could you go over there and get him for us?
Mm-hmm.
Sure. So I went over there, got him. I said, come on, you need to go with me, get your lunchbox. He said, what's wrong? I said, I hate to tell you this, you tested positive cocaine. No, ain't no way. He said, I've been to the dentist, and that was Novocaine. That was Novocaine. I said, well, I don't know if they're in the same family, but I'll tell you what you do. You get your dentist to write me a documentation on that it is and fax it to me. And I said, I'll send it to the medical review officer and see what they say. So I brought him back in. He got out of the car, went on his merry way. And then I get a call the next day from the office telling me, you need to call the Greenville Police Department. They want to talk to you. So I called over. I told them who I was. They said, was you with this gentleman yesterday? I said, yeah, I was with him. I said, I picked him up off a job, passed cocaine, and dropped him off. And he was going to the dentist to get me a... something from the doctor saying it was Novocaine instead of cocaine. And he never did show back up. And he said, well, he robbed a Pepsi Cola truck that day and he was using you for an alibi. I said, well, we didn't rob no Pepsi Cola trucks while we was together.
Yeah.
So he did that on his own.
I'm more of a Coca-Cola fan,
yeah.
Sir.
So it's, you know, it's just something all the time.
We had one, it's been several years ago now, and accidentally, you know, lucky somebody didn't get killed, but the took the guy and drug tested him afterwards, you know, from post accident, and he tested positive for cocaine and for meth. And so he called back, you know, afterwards, after they let him go and all that, and he was just, there's no way, you know, there ain't no way that I would never do meth. I ain't. And it's like, that, what about the coke? Right, you know, it's like, I understand what you're saying about meth, but what about the coke? I don't hear you say anything about that. So, I don't know, man. You hear some of the wildest things, especially when it comes to the drug tests and stuff.
Yeah, they can tell you some nice stories.
Yeah. I have been a part of some interesting situations that come around drug testing stuff and alcohol testing. But post-accident, just, you don't ever know what you're going to come across,
no. Man.
Oh, yeah. We're going to talk some more about the people side of it and just, you know, one of the things that I've noticed and one of the things that I've struggled with as I have, you know, progressed in my safety career that you forced me into is, you know, as you start out as a safety rep, right? You're basically dealing with people all the time. You're doing training, you're doing those, you know, accident investigations, you're doing site visits and walking and talking and all that kind of stuff. And you get, you know, if you're that type of person, a people person and enjoy being outside, like, that fits really well, right? And as you make your way up to maybe like a safety manager for a single company, you're still doing some of that, but your tasks start to become a little more administrative, right? And maybe you got a rep or two that are working for you. And, you know, next step up from that, maybe you're a regional type manager, you know, over several companies and you got managers like you used to be. And so progressively, you're working your way further and further away from the people that are doing the work. And to me, that's one that I struggle with because the job that I have may dictate that I am more administrative, right? I'm there to be a resource, but for a smaller group of people to do the job that I used to do. And so that's one that I struggle with because you see it with other people in other, you know, in operations and things like that. The further they get away, they start to kind of forget they're not making any money. You know, those people out there working are the ones making the money and those are the people you should be talking to. So, any
You're
thoughts
exactly
on that?
You're exactly right. And doing the training, that's a good way to learn people. Ask them about their family. If you can talk to somebody and make them feel like they're important, and the next time I see you a week and a half later, hey, Willie, how Billy Bob doing? You know, just stuff like that. And I was just saying that as an example.
Yeah.
But that makes a difference. And training is one of the best ways you can do it.
Mm-hmm.
Safety meetings. I think you can vouch for this. I never read a safety meeting.
Nope.
I did not get up there and read that thing verbatim what it was about. I looked over it before we got up there, and I got up there, and I started talking about it. And one thing you can do, you can ask a certain man, hey, how do you do lockout tag out at your plant? Put them on the spot.
Mm-hmm.
Make them talk. A lot of people's uncomfortable talking. You can talk to the rake man. Talk about him. What's your dangers on the job? What's your hazards? When we're talking about those things, get those people involved. They don't care about hearing you.
Yeah.
But if they, you know, if they feel like they're part of it, it makes a difference.
Mm-hmm.
So I used to do that, and I'll always get the boss to get up, and you know, if he wants to say anything, get him to do it. But it's always good to get those people involved, and that's one of the best ways you can. And as you said, get out there on that job. For anybody that's just getting in this, you'll learn more about a crew first thing of the morning or when they're getting off the road late at night.
Yep.
You'll learn the two things that they're doing then that could get them in trouble or get somebody killed.
Yep.
So I do stress that to you. Nobody wants to get up at 4 o'clock and go to work, but these people are having to.
Mm-hmm.
And as you just said a while ago, you're a resource for them. Got to be there for them. So you can learn something. And then that evening, when tempers flare and, you know, everybody's done had a hard day, be there to watch it, making sure they're parking 30 feet off the road. And you know what? Sometimes they will. Guess what? Sometimes they won't. But when you let a car hit a vehicle or a piece of equipment that's left out there on the road that wasn't that 30 feet barrier, you're opening yourself up to a lawsuit.
Yep.
And that's why it's so important that we have to do check to make sure the temporary striping's correct. If they're using tape, tape's supposed to be 4 foot long, 40 foot apart. I guarantee you, if you get one that's 2 foot long and closer than 100 foot together, you're going to be doing good.
Yeah.
But you've got to bring somebody's attention. Well, you don't know how much your stuff costs. Don't make no difference. If you don't want to do that, get your paint truck out there and do it. Because these are the kinds of things that can get us. We had a job on 41 out from Oklahoma. Two college students were killed, a Jeep rollover. And what he tried to say was, is in that detour, that he got confused because there was 10 foot of white sideline missing. And somebody with the highway department had took a piece of a can of paint and painted over that when we went by there. So there was something there, but it wasn't enough. But we were sued for millions and millions of dollars. The prime contractor did not do any investigation on it. I had the only thing, and I went back the night afterwards, found out what time the wreck happened, called and got to see what the weather conditions were that night, started that night, and went right down through the job site just like they was, showing every sign, reading out what it was, Type B flashing lights, and you could see them a mile away.
Yeah.
But those are things you got to do to protect the company.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't do them, nobody else does them. They can kill you to the cleaners.
Yeah.
And these things, they will.
Yep. Ain't no joke, man. That's one that more and more people are starting to realize, I think, is that, you know, something that we were doing at this point, you know, 12, 15 years ago, but driving through and videoing traffic control and things like that, having not just maybe a pencil whip report, but an actual video of this is what was there that day.
And read those signs.
Yeah, read the signs out, because we sure didn't have real good resolution on the camera back then, but even now it's still hard to tell. So
yeah.
Reading that out makes a whole lot of difference. So, yeah. How many times have you had to sit in a deposition?
Probably 12, 15.
Yeah. None of them are fun, are they?
There's things you have to do. You've got to think outside the box sometimes, trying to defend the company.
Yeah.
But what you don't want to do is lie.
Yeah.
Always tell the truth, because it's not worth it. Had a guy get killed one time and had some people try to get me to doctor the report, saying that wasn't no alcohol involved.
Mm-hmm.
And this guy was .36.
Ooh.
Yeah, he burned up in the truck. He was he was drunk.
Yeah.
And I told him, no, I can't do that. I said, we can't, two or three of us tell a lie. I said, so I'm just going to send everything to you and let you do it. Well, about 5 minutes later, I got a call. Just go ahead and turn it in.
Yeah, I ain't going to jail for anybody.
Folk are hanging you out to dry, even though they are your friends.
Yep.
There's something about money, isn't it?
It really is.
I mean, you get that incentive, that bonus at the end of the year, or you come by and see me in the penitentiary, whatever you want to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's one I'm actually surprised, but that still exists in some places where you've got the incentive that's based on strictly the incident rate, you know, and yeah. That's you have an accident, somebody cuts a finger off or breaks a finger, right? I mean, all they're going to do if you go, they're not going to do anything other than put a splint on it, right? So it'd be real easy just to, let's just forget about that because nobody's getting a bonus. And yeah. It's December 15th and I got Christmas presents on the way.
Yeah, trust me, I forgot about worse than that, but that's neither here nor there.
I'm just giving you an example. Yeah. I'm not saying it's the worst one.
I could give you some examples too. We're going to stop right there.
Yeah, I think that's
fair. I've got a stutter and it's getting close to me now.
Yeah, I know. I can tell you all of a sudden you turn into Mel Tillis over there. This if I don't end up in the penitentiary for this, then we may do it
again
sometime.
You're not
going
to end in the penitentiary.
Yeah.
Let me go back to you again.
Hey, go for it.
Talked about those years experience out there on the job. We used to pour curb mix by hand, asphalt curb mix.
Mm-hmm.
And they had to run that stuff about 450 degrees to do it. And we would get up in the truck and shovel that down into the curb machine. Be two of you in there at a time.
Yeah.
Now, you had to get some pallets or something up there to stand on. But still, you'd have to end up getting in that mix.
Mm-hmm.
I'm telling you, that would work.
Yeah.
Now, when you've done that yourself, and you see somebody else up there doing the same type job, or they're not doing that now. I mean, everything's modernized. But that's when you feel for those folks, and that's when you're there to help them.
Mm-hmm.
You don't take a damn pen and paper out there and go writing somebody up. You just don't do it. Young safety people, learn everything you can. Sometimes you learn more by just watching than you can anything.
Mm-hmm.
Training. I trained an old gal that worked for me. Her name was. And we did safety meetings every Monday morning, Greenville, Corinth, Tupelo, or Columbia, every Monday morning. And she had been going around and doing these for about a year. I said, you got to start doing these safety meetings. Okay, well, I just can't talk in front of people. So the first time I was going to get her to do it, she said, I've got the cramps. I'm sorry. It's that time of the month. I said, okay, I'll do it. The next Monday morning, still having the cramp. The next Monday morning, same thing. So the fourth Monday morning, I said, you either going to bleed to death or get up here and talk in front of these folks. And I got in my truck and left. And she had to do it. And sometimes that's what it takes. You just got to make somebody do it.
Right.
Put them on the spot, get them up there to do it. It was hard for her to talk. But 6 months later, she could talk to anybody. And, women in safety, she probably had a better rapport with a lot of the people than I did.
Yeah.
Because everybody say I'm rough and gruff and all that. Like you said, I was an inspiration or what?
No, I said you were either famous or infamous.
Yeah, that's right. But anyway, there's a lot. She could deal with empty inspectors a lot better than I could.
Yeah.
And train people. Let them know everything you know. People are afraid it's going to take their job. You know what? All it's going to do is open up opportunities for you.
Yep.
So don't be afraid. When I was learning how to run asphalt paver, man had been doing it 40 years and was an alcoholic, but he knew more about a paver than anybody. But when he saw I was catching on, he shut that off.
Yeah.
Quit doing anything. Then you learned it on your own. And those pavers, guys, you got up and walked around to the front to change gears on the transmission.
Oh, yeah.
You didn't sit there and flip a little button where you're at and have these nice big seats. We had one seat that you had to move to both sides. Sometimes they just stand up on the other side, keep them having to move it.
Right.
But things have changed. Equipment's better. Processors are better. And we've got good people, but it's got to take care of them.
Yep.
Try to hang on to them.
That's right. Don't be afraid to teach them something and show them something. And
no, exactly.
You'd much rather whoever you work for, figure out all these people have learned how to do the job from you. That's probably going to make you look pretty good,
And when you go out as a safety man, one of the first things you do is just start looking. Drive through, make sure those signs are up. And I used to always just get out of my car and just act like old country boy, didn't know nothing, putting his vest and his hard hat on. But the whole time I was surveying what was going on.
Yep.
And then when you get up there, after you've talked to him a little bit, hey, why'd you do that while ago?
Mm-hmm.
You're right there by the traffic. Don't do that. and talk to people, but you've got to get the respect.
Yep. Yeah. That's one of the things I have picked up by the time I get out of the truck and get hard hat and vest on. I've pretty much seen what I needed to see already. Exactly, I already know what I need to address when I get up there. And so, you know, you get in there and, hey, how's it going? And this and that. As long as it's not like a dire emergency, you know, you absolutely start talking to everybody and get a little laugh going here and there and be like, hey, let me ask y'all about this. What are we doing over there? You know, so it makes it a whole lot easier.
It's so easy when you're going up just not be paying attention. You got backup alarms you got to be looking for. Mm-hmm. Slow moving vehicle signs, oil leaks and stuff on the rollers.
Yep.
You can't have that. It's going to ruin the mix out there.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot for you to look at, especially if you know what to look at.
Yep.
But take that time to learn. And don't come out here thinking you know everything. You'll learn something every day if you let yourself.
Amen to that. Yeah, that, you know, and it's kind of like with accident investigation stuff. And this is one that I didn't pick up on for a long time. Right there where it happened is not where the view is, right? You're going to miss a lot being right there where it happened. If you get back, and it's just like you're saying, getting out of the truck, you know, and watching, or as you drive through watching, you can see so much more from looking back at a different angle and looking at it and seeing everything versus being right there where it is and where it's going on.
Where those five people got killed, I was up there helping them get the people out and helping do all this all around the car and didn't see anything. The next day in the newspaper, it showed a whiskey bottle laying right there by that car.
Yep.
I never once saw it.
Yep.
So you brought up a great point there.
Yeah. Yeah, it's
a great point.
Yeah, that's being, you know, not getting in a hurry, just stand back, take the time to let it all absorb into your brain a little bit. And then, you know, that one that I picked up on too is just, you know, when you get up there, just play dumb, right? And hey, what are y'all doing? Why are you doing it the way you're doing it? And just ask questions. For one, people want to share knowledge, right?
Exactly,
they want to tell you about it. But for two, you make them pick up, you know, if we've got some things we need to correct based on what they tell you they're doing.
And if you make a friend out of that foreman, you're going to get a lot further than if he's against you.
Yeah.
Because he's against you, all the men's going to be too, because they can't be buddies with you and be against you.
Yep. Whatever's important to him is going to be important to them.
That's right.
Yep. That's where you gotta be part-time politician. You know, you gotta be taking out the trash and, you know, kissing babies and handing out lollipops and running for mayor or running for archbishop or whatever
archbishop,
it is you may be,
that's right.
Whatever you may be trying to do. So, yeah.
And you're talking about this, what I enjoyed most, river. Well, we had a quarry up at Missouri and we had two river boats going up and down. And I'm telling you, I enjoyed that. And they didn't have anybody that was spending any time with them. And when I went out there and was trying to learn from them, man, they treated me like I was somebody. Have supper ready or lunch ready or breakfast ready every time I was come out there. They'd save me something.
Yeah.
They knew I was coming. But good bunch of people out there 30 days and off 2 weeks. That's tough life.
It sure is.
That's a tough life.
That's tough living for sure. Going up and down the river
But see some beautiful sights.
I bet. You see it the way nobody else does. Kind of like when you take a train trip, you know, you see parts of the country nobody ever sees.
Yep. You're right.
Yeah, I never got to do the river thing. Went out on the boat a couple of times, you know, when it was there and we were unloading or loading, but that's as far as I ever got to go. So, but it's always cool stuff, man.
Yeah.
That and rail is another one. I mean, you can't grow up in America, I guess, and not be fascinated with trains or whatever. Maybe that's just me. I mean, you grew up.
I'm on the wrong side of the tracks.
Yeah, you're on the wrong side of the tracks, right beside them. But that's another one that I've never had anything to do with, really, is any rail stuff. And that's another one
that
fascinates me.
It's just like everything else, it's dangerous.
Yeah.
If you let your guard down.
Mm-hmm.
Processes are there for a reason, and they need to be followed. But when you take a shortcut, it could be your last cut.
That's right. Especially when it comes to trains, man. Like, the only place they go is up and down the tracks, right?
Yep.
You get in there messing around, it's a good way to get caught.
Yeah.
I think that's it, man. Is there anything else?
All right, I'll call you and let you know if it is.
Yeah, I appreciate that. I'll have my people get to your people.
Yeah, do that, please.
Man, I sure appreciate it.
And that was 2 hours and my rate's $150,000.
Yeah, I'll get it.
Special thanks to Max Watson for being our first guest. He's been a great mentor and friend to me for over a decade at this point, so he was a natural choice for the first guest. If you've enjoyed this episode, do me a favor and tell someone about it. Like, subscribe, leave a review, tweet about it, all the things every podcast asks you to do. This is my first attempt at a podcast, so if you have constructive criticism or suggestions for guests, you can email those to safetymancumming@gmail.com.
There's no G at the end of Safety Man Coming. Otherwise, find us on the social medias. Now, if you've listened this far, you definitely deserve something for hearing me say fascinating too many times. Each episode, I'll tell you about a road food place I've come across in my travels. For the first episode, that place is Tacos and Papas in Monrovia, California. Now, I know what you're thinking. How in the world is that road food from, like, the South? Well, this place was so good it had to be first. It's also the only place on my list that is in Cali. They had amazing tacos and churros. Seriously, one of the best places I've been for just choosing something off Google Maps. So there you go. First episode down. Thanks again to our guest, Max Watson. Join us next time as we introduce you to another person behind the cone zone, Safety Man Coming.